This is Crashing the Boards with Austin Johnson and Dave Popkin on Fox Sports Radio, New Jersey. We are going to talk New Jersey college basketball every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. between now and the Final Four. Austin is the color commentator for Rutgers, of course, and I do the Seton Hall games and NEC and other stuff. We're going to talk about all eight Division I teams and beyond. And AJ, I'm so happy to do this show with you and to tip things off for the year.
I couldn't be happier. Talk about a little bit of appetizer ahead of your NFL Sunday mornings, being able to tap in to see what's going on and for all things college basketball in Jersey and from a national standpoint as well. And boy, do we have a couple of really exciting topics starting off with Seton Hall and Rutgers.
We do. And coming up in the show, we're going to talk with Seton Hall's Dylan Adewusu, Brett McConnell from Princeton, their associate head coach, and John Fanta coming up in just a few minutes. And you were at the Rutgers-Princeton game in Trenton. Great Jersey matchup on opening night. What were your takeaways from that one?
Princeton is still very good at basketball. Coming off of that Sweet 16 appearance against, you know, you got the Arizona dub and the Missouri dub. They lost a lot of key pieces, and Matalako, the senior, stepped up big time, 21 points. Caden Pierce, the reigning Ivy League Rookie of the Year, 15 rebounds at 6'6". That is something to write home about. And Xavien Lee, the Canadian, had spent some time this summer working out with the Canadian under-19 national team, stepped up big time in crunch time for the Tigers and for RU. Some questions to be answered. You got to figure out who's going to be that leader from a scoring standpoint. And there's some youth that's been injected into this lineup and, you know, some transfer. So it takes a little bit to be able to iron out the details as we start to progress in the college basketball season as well. And guess what? No Mawat Mag. So we'll see when he's able to actually be injected back into this lineup, because he's going to be integral to their success for the entire season.
That crushed Rutgers last year when they lost Mag. They probably would have made the tournament if he is in the lineup. And Princeton did a good job against Amori. Cliff had 13 points, like six boards, but didn't go off. You know, I think a 25-10 kind of game. These guys are 6'6", 6'7", but they get the job done. Great passing, great shooting. I would be shocked if Princeton lost like more than five games this year. I looked at their schedule, you know.
That team is locked to go back and win and be in contention for an Ivy League title again.
Yeah. Yeah. They were picked to win it. And then Seton Hall opening night, they trailed for over half the game. They beat St. Peter's by 11 at the Rock. They really turned it on in the second half and had that urgency. And we saw that sometimes last year, the year before, where they were a second half team. Dylan Adewusu, who will join us, provided a spark. Dre Davis was good. Kadari Richmond played with a wrap on his left hand. Didn't seem like a serious injury. Had his moments out there. He can get to the rim against anybody. And the big thing was Al Dawes hitting threes, because I think they made one three-pointer in the first half, and then the threes started to rain, and things started to open up a little bit. But it was definitely concerning, you know, looking at the team and saying, are they going to lose to a team that was picked like 10th in the MAC? I think the fans are apprehensive.
I still put preseason rankings to the wayside and don't really give them much weight until I see an actual group out on the floor. And guess what? I always say it's one of the most difficult things, winning a college basketball game at the Division I level. So you take it for what it's worth, and you look at the film, and you analyze it, and you try to correct and get better. And you, at the end of the day, Seton Hall walked away with a dub.
He's former Rutgers captain, Austin Johnson. I'm Dave Popkin. And our first ever guest on the program is none other than John Fanta, a guy that we've known for a long time. I knew him as a student at Seton Hall. He was my sometime broadcast partner on the Seton Hall Radio Network. And he is absolutely everywhere, AJ. He does a fantastic job.
Rightfully so. This guy is an encyclopedia of knowledge when it comes to the game of basketball, all in all. And I don't know many people who work as hard. You look at your social media platforms, you refresh your Instagram feed. This guy is everywhere that he needs to be able to continuously bring you all the breaking news from the college basketball level.
All right, let's take a listen. Our first guest ever on Crashing the Boards with Austin Johnson and Dave Popkin is a gentleman that needs no introduction to New Jersey basketball fans. He is a Fox broadcaster and writer. He's a host of Big East Shootaround. He appears on Field of 68 shows. He calls many sports, but he's perhaps best known as being the mayor of college basketball. John Fanta, how are you, sir?
Great to be with you guys. I'm doing fantastic. It's just a thrill that college basketball is back. The long summer months for all of us, while we all enjoy summer, now is the time. It has tipped off, and I love that you guys are doing this show, because the fact of the matter is this. New Jersey college basketball is big time.
Let's start on opening night. You had the defending national champs. What was your takeaway from UConn?
They are just a full steam ahead program heading into this year that is not looking at things from a complacency lens at all. They have multiple NBA draftees to come in Donovan Klingon, the big man. Without shoes last week, he measured at 7'3", so he's somehow grown more. And then Stephon Castle, the five-star freshman, the McDonald's All-American. But I think, guys, the player that does not get enough credit for UConn nationally, that is a winning player and that has only one thought in mind, and that's to be a better basketball player every day, is Alex Caravan, the stretch four. He had a career-high 22 points in UConn's win over Northern Arizona. He shot the basketball tremendously. He moved off the ball well. He's going to do that for them every game. For this team to have Caravan and Cam Spencer, who transferred from Rutgers, you know what kind of shot maker Cam Spencer is. UConn, when they went on a slump last year, guys, it's because they were not making any perimeter shots. That's not going to be a question at all this year for the entirety of it. They've got an elite big man who rim protects and Klingon. Samson Johnson's going to take a leap for them, and Tristan Newton is back, and he's your steadying point guard. The Huskies can be the first team, the first program in college basketball to repeat since Florida in 06-07 under Billy Donovan.
John Fanta is our guest. The next night you had St. John's. Like the Big East needed to get tougher, Ed Cooley goes to Georgetown, and St. John's gets the Hall of Famer in Rick Pitino. And they looked horrible in the preseason. They lost a Pace. And then all of a sudden they come out opening night and they look great against Stony Brook. How good can they be?
They could be really good. They could be a top 20 worthy team if all comes together, which when you have a 71-year-old who I think has, I don't want to say mellowed out, he's still extremely intense, but he's channeling it in a different way now. I think for Rick Pitino, there's no longer a pressure of, I've got to keep this job. He runs the place. He is the man now at St. John's. And Brian Shanley, the president at the university, knew what he was doing when he hired Rick Pitino. You're giving all control to your basketball program, and for that matter, your athletic department. And the vibe around Karnasek Arena was totally different, guys. They gave out letters that Pitino wrote to the fans. They were printed on cardstock. Every fan of the 5,600 some odd fans who were there at Karnasek, that's how much it holds. Every fan got this message. And to give you a couple of lines, Pitino said, "It feels good to be home. Like many of you, my story began here. As a kid riding the train to the Garden, ignited my passion for the game. We play for New York. This is personal for me." And he brought in 14 new players, so there's a lot of new. But the fact is, Joel Soriano was an All-Big East first-team performer under Mike Anderson. Chris Ledlam is a beast. I mean, getting that kid from Harvard, he was supposed to go to Tennessee. I could see why Rick Barnes wanted him so badly. He averaged 19-9 in the Ivy League. That was legit. Danish Jenkins is a power conference guard who knows what Rick's putting down. And Jordan Dingle averaged 23 points per game, albeit in the Ivy League. But there's nothing wrong with the Ivy League. And guys who average 23 points per game in college basketball do not grow on trees. They're deep. They're going to shoot. Here's the best example of how good they could be. Joel Soriano had played well over 100 college basketball games in his career. He had never hit a three in his life. He hit two in the first game of the season. That's player development.
And crucial for any good program to be able to be relying on people to come through the reins and step up when they need to be opportunistic and take on bigger moments. You talked about some of the key transfers, Cam Spencer, Jordan Dingle, who went to my alma mater, Blair Academy. So I actually know him pretty well. Any other transfers in the Big East Conference that threw a week of college basketball caught your eye?
For Seton Hall, Dylan Adewusu he made a defensive play in the win over St. Peter's that if it doesn't happen, it doesn't spark things the other way. So he did some quality things for Seton Hall. He will help them. Elsewhere in the Big East, Creighton got a point guard named Steven Ashworth that the world probably doesn't know a lot about. They will know a lot about him as the season goes on. I'm telling all of you right now, I believe Creighton's the best team in the Big East. They might be all the way out in Omaha, Nebraska, but folks, get that in your head because this is not just a good program. This is an incredible program. And Steven Ashworth transferred from Utah State to Creighton. He's married. He's 23. He's got his life figured out. He just wants to hoop now. So he's a guy that I zone in on, Austin. When I look at transfers in this conference, you know, I think a couple of important ones as well for Ed Cooley in Georgetown. They need Jaden Epps from Illinois to continue to play a big role. They need Rowan Brumbaugh from Texas to continue to play a big role. But the team that cleaned up the most in the transfer portal in the Big East is Villanova. Villanova crushed the transfer portal. TJ Bamba from Washington State. Tyler Burton from Richmond. You get Hakeem Hart from Maryland, who has NCAA tournament experience under Kevin Willard. And, oh, by the way, you brought in a Kentucky transfer in Lance Ware. Villanova with Justin Moore and Eric Dixon already back. The Wildcats are poised for a huge season.
Appreciate that pivot to the Jersey scene. And obviously we saw what happened with RU and Princeton in their first matchup. Princeton's good, again, riding the heels of that momentum to their Sweet 16 run last season. What are your takes on Big Ten basketball early on? What do you think it will take for someone to be able to break through and break that curse of not getting a national championship in 20-some-odd years for the conference?
Well, there's no time like the present for Zach Edey to do just that. What would it take? Maybe a 7'4", 300-pound man.
Not playing after you. Not playing after you. That's what it would take.
Yeah. Not playing. No. Just not playing it. What would it take for the Big Ten? With the exception of Rutgers, because you have to, the rest of the league has to, don't play anybody from the state of New Jersey. It's a really bad idea because Purdue keeps getting beat by Jersey. They got beat by St. Peter's. They got beat by FDU. They got to stop. And they got beat by Rutgers. They keep getting beat by Rutgers. So Matt Painter gets out of his car to fill his gas tank in New Jersey. That's going to get you put in prison. I'm sorry. You're not going to be able to do that at a New Jersey gas station. I don't know what it is, but the Jersey gods do not like Painter and Purdue. No, for me, this is their redemption season. The cards are laid out. I thought they got a lot of heat for the loss to FDU, and deservedly so. But you can't ignore 29 wins with a freshman backcourt. That backcourt's now more mature. They went out and made a quality addition to their backcourt to help out Fletcher Lawyer, to help out Braden Smith. When they brought in Lance Jones from SIU, that was a nice pickup by the Boilermakers. But my take on the Big Ten, it's unfortunate that Michigan State lost. I mean, that's a rough blemish for the league to take. Michigan State's supposed to be a top two program in this league. I would say the good news is I think Michigan's better than people expected. They're going to be better than people think. Wisconsin returns 9 of their top 10 scores. Illinois has Taron Shannon Jr. and cleaned up in the transfer portal. I love Marcus Domask. And Kevin Willard's going to have Maryland winning. So the Big Ten's going to be okay. The issue isn't that you haven't won a national title until you do. I would say, though, that this year presents one of the better chances for the league to do it because there are two title contenders. I still put Michigan State in the mix. They'll figure it out. They have Tom Izzo as their coach. Whereas other years, past couple years, I thought they had a lot of good teams, tournament teams. Doesn't always equate to national championship. That's what a little different. Sometimes when it comes to March profile, it's not bad when your league has a clear top.
Those expectations and everybody hoping that you actually reach them, that pressure can be insurmountable at different points. We were discussing all the great talent in the state of New Jersey and the different programs that sometimes fly under the radar that are formidable opponents on any given night themselves. How would you feel about a Big Five-esque college basketball style tournament for the state of New Jersey where everybody is able to compete? You think that's something that the college fans deserve?
It needs to happen. New Jersey needs it. The fans need it. Some coaches might not love it, but it needs to happen. Some things are bigger than what you might think. And publicity is important. With all the momentum in the Garden State, I don't understand why it wouldn't happen. And I want to give an immense amount of credit to Rutgers and Princeton for playing the Jersey Jam and getting the ball rolling. It says a lot that Mitch Henderson and Steve Peichel would come together and do that, particularly Peichel, because his team lost the game. They will be okay because they're one of the better coach teams in the country. Steve does a great job with his teams. They evolve as the year goes on. Princeton's a very difficult matchup for a first game. Why? They're principle-based. Why else? It was the first game against a team that made the Sweet 16 last year that might have lost a couple pieces, but still have a couple of key players from that team in Matalako and Xavier Lee and Zach Martini, Blake Peters and Caden Pierce. Those guys know what winning looks like. But more than anything, New Jersey needs to do this. You could rotate through the venues, do Atlantic City a year, do Trenton a year, go to the Prudential Center for a year, go to Piscataway for 1 year. Be unique, be dynamic, have some fun with it. Go to different areas of the state and showcase your product. There's too many great things happening in the state for there not to be an event for New Jersey annually in college basketball. And right now, there's no better time to do it because in New Jersey, football season has come to a screeching end.
Very true. I think if the three of us lobby for this tournament, it's got a shot. And if the NBA can play an in-season tournament, why can't college basketball play with the eight Division I teams in New Jersey? Seton Hall already plays four of those teams, and they're probably going to add NJIT next year. So why not?
And you can get creative with the venues. You can. You can rotate it around. And have the wherever your venue is, wherever school's closest, have them be in the marquee game. Go to Jadwin Gym and play a triple header. Be different. Be willing to be a little bit different and have some fun with it. And realize that if you've already got New Jersey Team X on your schedule, these things can be arranged. You might have 1 out of 3 years where you're playing a team that you don't want to play. But that's part of playing in an event. And I'm referring to Rutgers and Seton Hall probably having to go up against Princeton. But the fact is, that's how it is. I think that it's something that must happen for a state that's rich in college basketball. I think we all would love it.
John, we appreciate it. We got a wrap, and we will certainly talk to you as the season moves along. Continued success, and you're doing a great job on the FS1 games and everywhere else where you're appearing. It's just terrific.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you so much. And I love that you're doing this show because we need it in this part of the country. There's no question about it.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. That's John Fanta from Fox. Dave Pompkin and Austin Johnson back with you. Crashing the Boards here on Fox Sports Radio, New Jersey. Talking Seton Hall Pirates basketball. And joining us now is senior Dylan Adewusu, coming off the win against St. Peter's. 10 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and a lot of hustle out there. And Dylan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Can't complain.
Appreciate you making the time for us today. That game was very much in question on opening night. You guys were down at the under 8, but I didn't see a lot of panic out there. What was going on in the huddle and out on the floor?
Just a group of guys that been playing college basketball for a while. Started off slow, but we knew what had to get done. We dug one out.
I thought the big stretch that turned it around was when you dove on the floor and grabbed that ball, started a fast break, and then also hit a three-pointer kind of right in that same area of the game and turned the momentum a little bit. Crowd was getting into it. It's a good indoctrination for you into Seton Hall basketball, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it was a fun stretch of the game, and Al Dawes was hitting a bunch of three-pointers. What do you think was the difference in the second half?
Just playing Seton Hall basketball, you know what I'm saying? We got to understand that we're a tough team. Know the team that we are. You get what I'm saying? So that's what I feel like was the difference. That's Seton Hall basketball.
Obviously, early in the season, it's a time for you to fill the team out to get a sense of what the identity is going to be for each individual player. You've been at this level at other schools in the Big East. How do you find yourself starting to cement what you think your role is going to be for the Pirates going forward in the 2023 and 2024 season?
My role is just to play hard, be me as a player on and off the court, bring the energy, bring the toughness. And that's what Seton Hall basketball is. I'm all about that.
Stay with that theme of energy and toughness, being a local kid and still hooping in the New York City metropolitan area. How impactful and important was for you, obviously, with the St. John's background, to be able to continue your career here in Northern New Jersey, so close to home?
It was important, very important, being able to play in front of my family, fans, people close to me, people close to home is a big part of me. And that's another reason why I'm here right now.
Dylan, it was a little bit of a head scratcher last year with St. John's, and it must have been frustrating for you guys because it seemed like you had a good amount of talent on that team with Joel Soriano and with Posh and yourself and others. But it never really clicked. Like, what was wrong, and why do you think it fell apart?
I wouldn't be able to really pinpoint what was actually wrong. I'm past that right now, and I'm worried about what's going on here right now in the future with this program and my teammates.
It seemed like it was a pretty quick process over there as, you know, you agreed to come over to Seton Hall with Coach Holloway. What did he talk about with you that convinced you to come?
Just knowing Coach Holloway since high school, was at St. Peter's, did an incredible job over there taking St. Peter's to the Elite Eight, and just trusting his process and trusting his work and trusting what he's able to do. And I bought into what he's about. But the staff, they always good in their year too. So I'm been and I got strong belief for what is to get done.
I grew up hooping in AAU in the grassroots scene in North Jersey. I know that you played for a New York City AAU squad in the first couple of games that you have on your schedule this year, NJIT, St. Peter's, FDU. I would imagine they got a lot of guys from the local grassroots scene. You hooping against any guys that you played against in high school currently in the first couple of games?
NJIT, Mikhail Gray, went to Putnam, played against them a couple of times when I was at Our Savior Lutheran. Armani Ziegler, a freshman point guard for St. Peter's, who actually went to Our Savior Lutheran. So these are all guys and a couple other guys, but I can't really pinpoint everybody's name. But
love that. You stay in contact and, you know, keep an open tab with people throughout the season?
Yes, sir.
Really cool, you mentioned man. Our Savior Lutheran and your teammate, Jaquan Sanders, went there as well. And it seems like you've been a leader to him and some of the other younger guys on the team. It's funny how time passes and you become the old guy, right?
Yeah.
What's that experience been like for you dealing with those kids?
It's never easy, you know what I'm saying? But that's what being the older person or being the older brother takes a role. It's never going to be easy. So with time, you just got to keep motivating them and teaching them because Rome wasn't built in a day. So it's hard for them to understand and pick up things right away. So you just got to be patient and just stick with it and trust that they'll come along.
Playing Division I basketball, it's hard to get dubs regardless of who the opponent is. So is that a message that you teach or that you give out to the younger guys in the Seton Hall program?
Yeah, day in and day out, you can't take no team for granted. Can't be complacent. You coming out there to win, there's other teams, the same opponents coming out there to win. So you can't take no team for granted. You got to come out, play as hard as you can with a chip on your shoulder, day in and day out.
Looks like you may have lost a little weight, added some muscle. You've been in the weight room with Jason Nehring. It looks like you're in great shape right now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That was my main component, main focus this summer, getting my body right. Because when your body's right, you feel good, you play well, and you can actually move fluidly. And that was my main focus this summer. And still my main focus right now, you know what I'm saying?
Do you think you would like to stay in basketball after this year? I mean, I know you have a whole season to play, but maybe as a coach or a, you know, player overseas or something like that?
I haven't looked far ahead yet. I'm focused on right now and what I got accomplished with my squad and this team right now and our team goals that we got to do. So that's my main focus right now. I'm not looking too far ahead.
Kadari Richmond, you got a chance to play against him for a couple of years in the Big East, and now you get to play with him. He's a guy that can go into takeover mode. For the folks that maybe haven't seen him or don't know him personally, what kind of a guy, what kind of a player is Kadari?
Kadari's a dog. He can get it going in a heartbeat. Great person off the court. Just a good person and a good player to play with.
Dylan, we appreciate all the time today. Wish you luck this season. I'll be seeing you out there on the road, and we'll see Austin at that Garden State Hardwood Classic as well. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. That's Dylan Adewusu of Seton Hall, a senior guard for the Pirates. It's Crashing the Boards here on Fox Sports Radio, New Jersey. Dave Popkin, Austin Johnson with you. And Talking college hoops, of course, and doing so now in the Ivy League. The Princeton Tigers coming off their magical Sweet 16 run last year and their big win against Rutgers on opening day. A gentleman that's been an assistant coach for over 10 years now for the Tigers, a Jersey guy, Brett McConnell, joins us. How you doing?
Doing great, Dave. Thanks for having me. You and AJ, I've been following. I saw the news of this new show coming out and figured I'd listen to it. Wasn't sure I'd be one of the first guests, so I'm excited to be with you guys.
Yeah, thanks. We're thrilled to have you on and much appreciated for you coming on, being one of our first guests. And an exciting week for you and the Princeton Tigers, all in all. A bit bittersweet for me as a former RU guy, but how does it feel to keep the momentum going? You know, big time wins and last year's NCAA tournament, being able to get a real big dub in your first game against your alma mater.
It's certainly extra special for me being my alma mater and a place that, you know, my dad has worked for a long, long time. And growing up, you know, these Rutgers-Princeton games were a really big part of the yearly rivalry. So it was a game that I got up for on the other side of the rivalry when I was young. And then to go 10 years without having this game was really special to finally get another chance to be involved in this rivalry. And I thought our guys really embraced the challenge. We have a senior from Jersey and Zach Martini, who's had this game circled for a long time. And then Matt Alaco, who went to high school in Ohio, but a ton of family from Jersey. His dad grew up in Jersey. He had a lot of people at the game. So our two seniors, it meant a lot to them. It meant a lot to our program, our alums. So a really special way to start the season.
And sticking with that game and that theme, I know you're very professional in your approach, but how do you compartmentalize when you have the Scarlet Knights on the imposing side and you're trying to lock in and just win and focus on where your feet are now that you're with Princeton University?
I wasn't thinking too much about, you know, the sentimental aspect of it. And I was saying goodbye to my son in the morning. He's 15 months old. He has no idea what's going on. But I was like, it's Rutgers versus Princeton today. And I got a little bit emotional because it is a big deal to me and my family and a whole bunch of my friends too, and obviously our program. So that was my one little moment where it got the best of me maybe a little bit. But, you know, we've learned as a team, me personally, in these big games, and we're coming off obviously the Sweet 16 trip, once the ball is tipped, it's just another basketball game. And I think once that happens, it's really easy to lock in and start thinking about the defensive coverages or the offensive execution. Certainly we're really proud of the way the guys executed and handled business.
In that game against Rutgers, Cliff Amore, who's one of the best centers in the Big Ten, in the country, really, you guys kept him in check, I felt like, with 13 points. And that's despite the fact that you lost size and quality off of last year's front line. How were you able to do that?
He's awesome, first of all. I mean, Cliff is a load. He's a super athlete. You know, we had been talking about him all, you know, week, month, year leading up to the game. And some of our guys, when they saw him on the court, were like, he's even bigger than we thought. Like, this guy is such a great athlete. I thought we did a heck of a job on him with the double teams. I thought the way our guys attacked him in the double teams was really key. And, you know, he still scored a couple times over the doubles. And that's just something that's going to happen. But, you know, the biggest key for me, both individually with Cliff and for our team overall, was winning the battle on the boards. Rutgers clearly had a size advantage on us. You know, believe it or not, and I think people haven't been maybe thinking about this or talking about this, we were seventh in the country in defensive rebounding percentage last year. It's been an identity for our program for a long time. So big, small, whoever goes out there, we have an expectation that we're going to compete on the glass. And I thought to win the defensive glass and the offensive glass on Monday night was a huge key to the win.
This conversation is bringing a bit of nostalgia up for me as a former player. I remember getting introduced to you as the senior manager for the Rutgers basketball team. You've definitely earned your stripes with stops around different places in the New York City metropolitan area, and more specifically, New Jersey sports, St. Peter's and other stops. How does it feel for you to take a step back and look at where New Jersey college basketball is, considering all the different aspects and universities, you know, that are competing at a high level?
Oh, man, what an exciting time for New Jersey basketball. And obviously, you know, between Princeton and FDU making their NCAA tournament runs, obviously I'm a lifetime Rutgers fan, and the success that Coach Peikel and that program has had in recent years. I know Coach Holloway and Seton Hall have a great tradition, and they're going to be on to great things. Riders picked to win their league this year. I mean, this is what people that love college basketball in this area, I think, really appreciate the current landscape of New Jersey basketball right now. And to play this game, the Rutgers-Princeton game, speaks to that, and it brought a great energy to opening night, and I'd love to see that continue. I'd love to see it expand. We're playing Monmouth, who I should have mentioned. We've been playing Monmouth consistently every year. We'd play every team in Jersey if we could. So I'm thrilled with where the state of New Jersey college basketball is right now.
All right, I want a scouting report. You were the manager there, and you saw AJ play. What kind of a player was he? We're gonna expose it all right now.
I'm dating myself here, AJ, because I wasn't in college with AJ. This young buck on the show here with us, AJ, so young. But I remember him as a high school player first. And what I will say stands out was just the type of kid he was. It wasn't always that way with recruits, let me tell you. It stood out to me, the type of character, the work ethic. You know, he was a kid at 16 years old, would go up and shake your hand, introduce himself. So that stuck with me, and it's no surprise to see the success that he's having. And, you know, I've Googled his stats every now and then just to remind myself of the type of player he was. But better than that, he's just a great guy. And I've texted him a couple times over the years that I caught his radio broadcast, on Rutgers games. And we have some mutual friends in New York City that keep their eye on him a little bit, too. So he's one of the best Scarlet Knights I know.
Appreciate you. And speaking of those mutual friends, they all texted me to talk a little trash after the Tigers were able to beat RU.
Oh, but man. Hey, guys, we got bragging rights. I don't know how long they'll last, but we got them right now, so we'll take them.
No, I appreciate you. And along those lines of the grassroots scene, your name is becoming synonymous with being an expert recruiter. It's a little bit of a different game when you have to consider some of the dynamics of getting kids into the Ivy League. Can you talk about, some of those obstacles that, you know, you have to take into account when you're considering if a guy is good enough to play at the Division I level, but also you have to consider, does he have the grades to make the cut?
I mean, that's the first place we start at Princeton, getting those transcripts, making sure somebody can do the work here at Princeton, get admitted to Princeton. That's the number one key. I think we have a really defined culture at Princeton of the work ethic that it takes on and off the court to succeed, the unselfishness, the type of teammates. We want great teammates in our program. And so identifying that even before we start thinking about, you know, how many shots this guy is going to make or how many rebounds he's going to get, do they fit our culture? Are they going to be a great piece, a great teammate, a great fit? And I think that's really a big part of the success we've had. I think if you watched us on Monday, you saw a really connected group, a group that plays for one another, that plays together. That takes a lot of time and hard work and unselfishness, but that's something that we really work hard to identify in recruiting.
Princeton associate head coach Brett McConnell is with us here, coming off their big win against Rutgers, picked to win the Ivy League again this year, and wanted to talk about some bigger picture items, the Brown former players and current players suing to get scholarships in the Ivy League and NIL collectives. And you guys have been kind of immune to conference realignment. You know, the Ivy has been able to maintain its membership in terms of that, but college basketball is changing so much. Do you think that will change your job at Princeton over the next couple of years, any of these potential movement?
It's really hard for me to predict, to be honest. And I read the headlines sometimes, but you know, when we were just talking about this, and there's just so much prep work in the season, the recruiting, the scouting, I can't get too caught up in trying to predict some of those things. I know that everybody in our business has to be ready. You've got to be ready for whatever changes come your way. And I think when those next set of changes come out, we're going to work really hard to make sure that we capitalize on any opportunities that come our way. Right now, I'm worried about Hofstra, and then it's Duquesne after them, and it's Monmouth after that. So Rutgers was the first priority, and now we're on to the next one, and that's where our focus is.
The other question I had was, your starting lineup is so great, right? They pass it well. They shoot it well. So skilled. Caden Pierce, and you mentioned Zach Martini and Matalako and Lee and Peters. I mean, these guys are a pleasure to watch, like, as a basketball fan. Who's going to come up behind that and provide you with some depth, because there's a lot of new guys there?
That's a great point, and it's a really big key to the season, right? You can't play five guys the type of minutes we played those guys throughout the season. We have a few back-to-backs in the Ivy League. It's not every weekend in the Ivy League anymore, but we have a few back-to-backs. So you can't get away with playing five guys 35 minutes a game. It's just impossible. So we're going to need those young guys, those guys that came off the bench. We played five guys, limited minutes off the bench, all of those guys. And really down the whole list of the roster, those guys are going to have to step up. And, you know, what's different, a little bit different at Princeton compared to Rutgers or some of the teams we're going to play is our freshmen and sophomores, anybody, they haven't been here all summer the way they would be and the way Austin was as a college player. Our guys are at home or doing internships or all around the country playing in summer leagues, et cetera. So we're not working with these guys in the summer. And it's a little bit of a learning curve and adjustment that they've had these last 2 months, but I think they can take a really big jump in the coming weeks and months. So I think our younger guys have a real chance to make a big impact on the team sooner rather than later.
And last one for me, your father has had tremendous success as an administrator in the RU world and his still continued affiliation with RU football. How has he influenced your individual career coming up as a coach? And then second, have you been keeping tabs on RU football? What have you been thinking about with Coach Chiano's been doing?
Hey, we're going bowling, first of all. So it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, the guys on the team know that I'm a Rutgers, it's in my blood, right? And they know my dad works for the football team. And on Saturdays, I'm after practice, the first thing I'm doing is running in to check the score, check the game. So Matt Alaco, 21 points, 9 rebounds against Rutgers on Monday. On Saturday, it was Rutgers, Ohio State. And he's like, BMAC, this is your last chance this week to root for Rutgers. It's over after this kickoff. So the guys know that I'm following it closely, and I'm a diehard Rutgers fan. I was at the opener against Northwestern, and obviously with my dad being there, it's extra special. The impact he's had on me, I mean, you don't have enough time on this radio show for me to list the things that he's impacted me. And, you know, the things even just at a young age that, you know, I'm sitting shotgun in the car and he's on the phone talking, you know, some type of athletic department matter. And I'm learning the marketing, the administration side of things, all the different things that go on to having a winning program outside of the X's and O's and being able to, you know, be at any sport and pick up on things because I was there with him has been really impactful to me for a long, long time. And then when I need advice on some career stuff, he's the first person I call. Maybe the best thing though is he was wearing orange and black on Monday. And
hey, I didn't catch that. That's why
I know, you know, he'll be wearing red and black for every other day this year, but he wore orange and black that night and was really special to have him there on Monday.
That's really cool.
That's really fantastic. Really cool. Please send our regards to him. And Brett, great job today. We really appreciate the time. Good luck this season. Look forward to watching your team play.
Thank you, guys. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that we're good enough for you to call me back in March and there's a reason to keep talking about Princeton basketball. So
will do.
Thank you, guys.
That's Brett McConnell joining us here, the associate head coach from Princeton. Take a quick timeout. Be back with more Crashing the Boards with Dave Popkin, Austin Johnson after this. It's Crashing the Boards with Dave Popkin and Austin Johnson talking New Jersey college hoops here on Fox Sports Radio New Jersey, getting set for Rutgers against BU coming up in just a couple minutes, AJ. And before we go, I just want to get your take on what you're looking forward to in general for college basketball this season.
Nothing better than college basketball, and I think more magical moments from all the different schools within the Garden State. Are you taking down Purdue with half-court buzzer beaters or out? And West Lafayette or Princeton's magical run or, you know, the giant slayers, if you will, taking down Purdue in the NCAA tournament. And I just love to see the availability of some of our star players in New Jersey at the college basketball level to be healthy. Mawat Mag coming back, but also get a full season to see some of these kids showcase their talents at the highest level. How about you?
I want to see Caitlin Clark, the women's basketball player from Iowa, who's selling out football stadiums and Carver Hawkeye Arena. She's a Tiger Woods of her sport. I'm going to be paying attention to that. I'm certainly going to pay attention to Princeton because I think they can make another run deep into the NCAA tournament. I'm looking forward to going to San Diego with Seton Hall, get a little jealous sunshine in November. Maybe they can get a split out there. And of course, Garden State Hardwood Classic. That'll be the rivalry game for you and me, December 9th, Rutgers and Seton Hall.
We won't talk that week. It's okay, though.
Seton Hall, 7-2 in those Garden State Hardwood Classics. Just saying. Okay.
Well, who's counting?
Who's counting? Thanks to our guests, John Fanta from Fox, Dylan Ade Wusu from Seton Hall, Brett McConnell from Princeton. Thanks to production assistants from Mike Cohen, Jack Myatt, Ginny Ott, Tom Stark, and Alexander the Great, Alex Garrett. Join us every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. here on Fox Sports Radio New Jersey and foxsportsradionewjersey.com. Check us out as a podcast as well. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Rutgers and BU coming up next.